so high. Walking single file.
All right, Liam, I want to thank everyone at the Oasis podcast, as you were.
Good afternoon, this is Noel Gallagher here from Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds.
James from the Oasis podcast.
He's been working so hard recently that he's got to go away and have a little rest. So he's asked me to come in and hold the fort for a while. And it happens to be my birthday, so I've been allowed to pick the years for today's show. So of course I'm going to pick 1967 because that's the year I was born. Crazy, right? And in hour two we're going to jump forward to a chart from 1979. In hour one, that means we're going to get hits from Arthur Connolly, Jimi Hendrix, the Mamas and the Papas. But in hour two, we've got tracks from Boney M, David Bowie and the Electric Light Orchestra. But let's go back to 1967 with a new entry at number 21. It has been covered over 1,000 times and was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. It will go on to top our charts for 6 weeks and sell 10 million copies. But today, sadly, it sits at number 21. And it's Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are all okay. We've got a really good episode for you today. Catching up on some of the extra Noel bits of news that has been there. He's been very busy, loads of bits and pieces over the last sort of few weeks, so we'll catch up on that. Plus also we've got an interview with Steve from Embrace. Really excited to speak to Steve. Embrace, you know, great band. And, you know, I think that what they're doing with their use of Patreon and stuff like that is really interesting and sort of a very interesting way forward in terms of how the music industry is going to go and stuff. So really good chat with Steve about the 90s and about, you know, the general career of Embrace and how a few tie-ins with Oasis. So it should be very interesting. Now, it's been a month or so since the last episode. For those of you that don't know, I lost my mum last month, which was, you know, very sad, very tough. So I wanted to sort of just take a little bit of time out from the podcast and from sort of social media and stuff just to focus on that and help out with family and getting everything sorted and things. So it's been a tough old month, but I'm very pleased to be back now. I did a Barrow House radio show that kind of kicked me back into gear, to be honest, because that had that specific date it goes out, so I had to get that done, and that's been quite good because it sort of got me back into it. So back on with the podcast now, and it's been great. It's good to have the microphone in front of me again and doing this, getting back into, you know, what I really, really enjoy doing. Unfortunately, because of obviously what happened, I wasn't able to do the Alan McGee shows at the Water Rats, which I was devastated about. I did think about still making it, but there was just so much on with organising funerals and all that sort of stuff, so I just couldn't make it. But Magic Mod stepped in for me. He was absolutely brilliant by all accounts, and you know, the show must go on. And from the videos I saw and stuff, and they had an absolutely brilliant time. So we will get back out again doing live events very soon, hopefully. But watch this space. Let's hope things sort of get back to normal from later this month, and then we can start doing like proper live events again. It would be absolutely fantastic. And finally, just on that point, I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone that sort of sent me messages. I mentioned it on the Patreon Discord, and I mentioned it on Twitter briefly about my mum's situation. So, and I got loads and loads of messages and kind thoughts and offers to chat and offers to, you know, people sharing what happened with them, their stories of a lot of people that lost parents and things like that. So, you know, it was really, really appreciated. And thank you to everyone that sent a message. That really did mean a lot. But anyway, enough of that stuff. Let's go into some of the Noel Gallagher bits that has been happening this week, or these last few weeks. So there's been a couple of documentaries on Sky Arts that Noel has been a talking head on. One of them was the live revival and a few bits from Noel, including him talking about the Water Rats show, which was really cool to see him interview the Water Rats and talking about that show and talking about the Water Rats itself. You know, to think that I was on that stage, you know, a year or so ago, and then now Noel's on that stage. So how cool was that? But anyway, let's have a little bit of that.
Well, it was the first official one. Yeah, it was the first official one. The actual first one we did was in the Powerhouse in Islington. And the reason for that was that we were on tour heading to London. We were going to be signed to Epic in America. And two of the head guys happened to be in town, but were going to be left, would have left by the time we got here. So somebody squeezed us on the bill at the Powerhouse in front of about six people. Four of them were from Epic. That was our first ever gig, but there was no one there. So this was the first official one. It's actually a lot nicer than I remember it. I remember it being a bit of a fucking shithole, actually, but it's kind of not bad.
Also, Noel was on later with Jules. He didn't before, which was a shame. I thought he might do something, but he was just sort of picking his favourite performances from later. And he picked The Strokes, Last Night, Paul McCartney, 1985, The Coral Dreaming of You, Young Father's Toy, and The Zootons' Valerie. So some cool choices there. I really like the story of him meeting Tom Hanks. And also the story of how Russ joined Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. I haven't heard that one before, so that was quite cool to hear.
So the last music you've chosen is the Zootons.
Well, good mates of mine. The bass player is now my bass player. When the Zootons broke up, sitting in... And Oasis had just broke up. And I was sitting in the back garden one afternoon, and the phone went, and it was just a number, it wasn't a name. I don't usually answer that kind of thing. Anyway, I did. And on the end of it, it's Scouser. Oh, that ain't me. It's Russ from the Zootons. And I was like, all right, mate. And I met him a couple of times and hung out with him. And he's like, are you going solo? I said, yeah. He said, are you making a record? I said, yeah. He said, can I play the bass? And I was like, yeah. And he said, is that it? Is it that easy? And I was like, yes.
He also did Jonathan Ross. It was cool. He was there, like, for the full hour. That was quite good. It wasn't just, like, a couple of minutes. He was there sort of chiming in pretty much the whole show. And, and there's a few clips that, you know, have been dropped on YouTube, one of which, obviously, whenever he's on, you know, Jonathan Ross feels the need to ask about Oasis reunions. So there we go. Let's stick the Oasis reunion bit on so you can check that out.
When Liam was on the show, he claimed that you had been offered $100 million to perform together again as Oasis.
Yeah.
Which it sounds extraordinary.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily untrue, but is that true?
Why do you say it's not necessarily untrue? Because it is untrue.
Well, I'm saying it's not necessarily because I can understand that someone could
make
enough money. Nobody.
There isn't £100 million in the music business, right? Between all of us, right? So the fact that any one band or me, but I wouldn't. If anybody wants to offer me £100 million now, I'll say it now, I'll do it. I'll do it for 100 million. Right? It's a ludicrous. What is funny though is that I think Liam actually believes it, which is the funny thing.
But Liam, I've known him a little bit better now. I wouldn't say I know either of you terribly well, but I think I know you slightly better than I know him. But I thought he was this sort of wild character, and he's definitely mellowed. He has definitely changed, and you must have seen that.
Well, he's nearly 50. Isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So he's getting older, and I wonder therefore if there is, even if just for the sake, you know, would you not want to perform again? Because you must miss him on stage sometimes.
Not particularly, no. I don't, because it's a different band.
Yeah, but I mean, all right, but put High Flying Birds on stage. They're still there. You'll still be doing High Flying Birds. Of course you will. But would you not want to be with him on stage again?
Well, as I was saying to the guy in the Oasis documentary yesterday, I find it a bit sad that there's a whole generation of kids, working class kids, who have got nothing of their own to buy into, and they're projecting all that onto a couple of 50-year-old fellas. Where's the new Oasis? Mm. Where's that? Mm. Where is that? Where are those guys?
Maybe it's not in rock and roll. Maybe it's in, like, the grime scene now. If you look at artists like Hedy Wan and Dutch Valley and all those guys.
But listen, the thing about bands is they're hard work. Mm-hmm. They are hard work. It's hard work. To do what we did is hard work. You're in a band with five other geezers. You might not like two of them. Mm-hmm. Definitely won't like two of their wives. Blah, all that kind of thing. It's graft. You've got to graft it out, and it takes years. But now it's easy to buy a laptop and make it in your bedroom.
See, what I find interesting there is this 100 million figure. I mean, when we say 100 million, what are we talking about? Because, like, for instance, you know, I'm a big boxing fan, and so, you know, we've been talking a lot about, like, the Tyson Fury Anthony Joshua fight that didn't happen. And so what kind of happens there is you have, like, a you know, what they were hoping to get was, like, a site fee that, you know, that the Saudi Arabia were going to, like, guarantee put up this money. And then, you know, then obviously then there'd be pay-per-view and whatever else would come from that. But so, I mean, what does it mean, £100 million for a reunion? I don't understand what they mean by that. I mean, it would be interesting actually to talk to, you know, someone that puts on big events like that. But I mean, would it be like they pay them £100 million, but that covers a full tour? Or would it be they pay them £100 million, but that covers a full tour, and that's just the cost of everything, you know? But then what would actually Noel and Liam get on the end of that, and whoever else would be in there? So, I mean, I don't think it would be like they either split between them or individually would get 100 million. And what would that mean? So, I whether or not it is just that as a figure plucked out of the sky, I would be fascinated actually to understand what would be the logistics of an offer of that nature. But anyway, we'll probably never know, but there you are. And as you heard at the start there, Noel went on Pick of the Pops and sort of picked tunes from 1967 and 1979. And also with Man City being in the European Cup final against Chelsea, there was quite a few bits and pieces of interviews, mainly just around football, though, by Noel. And Liam was at that match as well. So they were pictured together. Sorry, not together. They were both pictured at the during the broadcast, obviously, like in separate areas of the stadium. But anyway, who knows? Maybe if Man City had won, they might have both been celebrating in the dressing room, and that could have been the reunion. But they both lost, so I imagine they both just buggered off pretty sharpish. Oh, one other podcasty sort of point to make. Last episode, we had this situation where Ryan Harvey had bought a cameo from Matt Morgan.
James, aka JC, I'm here to wish you a happy 4th anniversary of the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Well done. It's hard to get a podcast going. It's even harder to make one last 4 years. So I personally am very proud of you for doing that. This message is from your number one patron, Ryan Harvey. That's what he claims to be. And he is saying that I should tell you, and I think this means me, someone out there, hopefully will one day be able to get you an interview with the Chief, Noel Gallagher. I never called him the Chief, but I do know that's who he is. Let me try. Let me ask him. I mean, he's a grumpy little bastard, but sometimes you never know. You've done 4 years of a podcast devoted to something that he created. Surely he owes you an interview, doesn't he? Well, anyway, well, I'm going to ask. I'll try. Hit me up with a message and on Instagram, and I will, I mean, I'll ask him. You know, that's all I can do. But for now, well done on 4 years of the podcast. Good work, sir.
And then I said that I'd spoken to Matt and sort of asked him about, you know, this Noel interview and my little reply. Well, it turned out we did get a reply from Noel, which was very interesting and very entertaining on the next Matt Morgan episode. So, yeah, check this out.
Yeah, you were in one of those stupid video messages for some poor cunt.
Oh, that. I didn't send you that. You sent me that and said, does it come to this?
Got anything better to do?
Yes, I've got lots of better things to do, but it's about earning money. The world's changed, baby. There's a pandemic on. We can't all just sit back and go, oh, how much has Wonderwall made me today? Right? I have to get out there and graft.
Would you like to know?
Yes. How much a day does Wonderwall make you?
I'm just going to sum it up in a laugh.
Have you ever could you put a figure on that
per day?
If you phoned up your money man and went, guys, by tomorrow I want to know how much does Wonderwall make me a day.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to know, because I'd probably go, is that all? Fuck's sake.
I reckon $6,000 at the moment
a day.
Nah, it's more than that, isn't it? It's got to be.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't fucking tell you, because I guess it's all wrapped up in that album, isn't it? So, who knows?
Right.
Who knows?
Well, anyway, you sent me the video of me doing a Matt Morgan cameo for the Oasis podcast, and you said, seriously, is this what it's come to?
And I sent you that video?
Yes, granddad.
Who the fuck sent it me then?
Some cunt who's going, here, look what Matt's done. Look, your mate. Hawking himself like a fucking prostitute.
Oh, I bet it was Sarah.
Ah, that makes sense.
Bet it was Sarah.
Dropping me in the shit.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I've stopped doing all them anyway.
Yeah, fuck that, mate.
So, not exactly what we were hoping for. You know, we were maybe hoping that we could actually get an interview, but doesn't sound like we will get an interview anytime soon. But at least, you know, I've heard someone say the words Oasis podcast in Noel Gallagher's presence, which was amazing. And also just the idea that Sarah has then looked up this video of Matt talking about the Oasis podcast and has sent it to Noel, and then him and Noel have had a laugh about it. That, to me, just the fact that's happened, I do find quite entertaining. And obviously, if we get the interview, that would be great. But for the time being, hey, that's just quite cool to know that that has sparked some hilarity between them. So thank you again for Ryan Harvey for doing that. One other bit, I suppose, is that the Nebworth film, both Noel and Liam have apparently seen it, and they both, you know, talked about how it's brilliant and they're really, really excited to see it. Liam was really focused on how the, you know, how the fans are the stars, really, and that's the key thing, which, you know, really want to see that. No sign of a trailer yet, but if it's not coming out until October, so, you know, it's understandable. But it would be great to see it. And, you know, very much looking forward to seeing that in cinema. And I think that would about do it. I mean, there's been a load of other Noel Gallagher interviews, but nothing that's really jumped out as being extremely exciting, unless you want to let me know if I've missed something that was extremely exciting. But there we are. And then the other thing is that Noel's video for the next tune from the Best Of, Flying on the Ground, should be released on Monday. So we'll be hearing that song on Monday. And so depending on when I get this out to you, there may be a little clip coming up, or there may be not, depending on when I get this. You never knew what you told, or coming out of the cold. We'll say a prayer for everyone that we know. As the years go by, I'll wipe the tears from your eye. What we need is love and a place we call home. James here. This is a couple of days later. It's now Monday morning, late Saturday night, Monday morning, and the tune's dropped. And I love it. I think it's beautiful. I think it's really lovely. It's got a real Style Council vibe, a real Burt Bacharach vibe, both things I very much like. I think the melody's nice. I really love the way that the chorus ended there, with all the voices coming together and harmonising. I thought it was really lovely. Interesting whether or not this was a song from the Be Here Now era. I think it does feel like that. And apparently there was a song around there called Flying High, brackets on the ground. So whether this is the same song or not, we don't know. But anyway, yeah, really like it. Have to give it a few more listens and pluck through the lyrics a bit more. But first impressions, well done, Noel. Top draw stuff. Right, back to me in the past. All right, that'll do it for my chat. Let's go on to now my interview with Steve from Embrace. I'll never let you down or ever feel the way that I've been fearing now. I'm coming back to what you know of me to think. Everything that you've done keeps you from me. Now I know that I need more time. Come back and let me see your life. I'm coming back to what you know. I know that I need it now, it's gone. Now I know that I need more time. Come back and let me see your eyes. Yeah, welcome to the Oasis podcast. Very excited to be speaking to Steve from Embrace. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm very good, thank you.
Wonderful. I like your setup there. You've got a nice rack of vinyl and nice...
A rack of books, but mine's all vinyl. There's no room in my house for anything but vinyl.
Are you a big vinyl collector?
I am an addict, proper addict. It's a tough one. Once you start buying a band, I get sucked in, and I'm a bit of a completist as well. I don't know if you know a band called the OCs, but they're one of my favourite bands, and they seem to release about four albums a year on three different coloured vinyls, and they're costing me a fortune.
It's a tricky one. When I was at uni in Leicester, and a mate of mine there was a big mod, and I was sort of started to delve into Northern Soul, and I bought a few 7-inches, like just reissues, not originals. Yeah. And I just thought I could see a pathway ahead of me, you know what I mean? I think I don't want to go down that path. It's going to be too expensive.
You convince yourself that they're going to be worth something one day as well. That's the other sad thing you do. Although I have got a couple of idol singles, really early rare singles, that are worth a bit of money, so we're lucky there. Yeah. Most, you know, I'm never going to sell them anyway, really.
Exactly. You wouldn't sell them anyway. No, absolutely. But cool. But how's, obviously, it's been a very bizarre year or so for everyone in your industry. It's been a tough year, but you guys have made the most of it with this absolutely brilliant idea, which is the secret list, which is Patreon. And we were just saying then before we started recording, like, I can't believe more musicians don't do this, because it's like a subscription service. If you love Embrace, and so many people do, you are more than happy. I'm not just going to buy a ticket for a gig once or buy an album for when that comes out. You will happily pay a monthly fee to have the benefit of all this great stuff. And I think what you guys are doing is revolutionary, and you're providing a brilliant service for your fans.
Yeah, I mean, we are quite early to it, but I think a lot of people are a lot quicker to it than we were. We sort of saw the bands doing it. I think we saw Mark Burgess from Chameleons, he'd start doing it. And we just thought, that's interesting, would it work? And we suddenly realised we'd recorded everything we've ever done, really. We've got 25 years of us messing around backstage at gigs, touring America, Japan, Thailand, and thought, stick these into make little films of these things. Because I spent a lot of time digitizing old VHS tapes over the last year, which has been a ball ache. But we've made them all into hundreds of little films. So they get a little film every month telling a story. We do interviews. Our manager interviews us about each album at each period of time, and we all sort of talk about that. So they get access to the thoughts of Embrace. We do quizzes. It's just anything we can think of, really. Competitions. They're meant to get first access to gig tickets and information, when we start doing things again, they'll be the first people to get that information. So, you know, we're still learning how to make it interesting and keep everyone involved. Because, you know, the other thing we had as well is all the demos and songs that didn't quite make albums. And over the years, we had, well, not hundreds, but say 50 of these songs just sat there, which nowadays you don't need B-sides. Back in when we started, we were doing 3 B-sides and for every song we did. And now it's just an album, so a lot of songs don't quite make the great, but still great songs. So we're giving these away every month as well. And hopefully one day we might do something like stick them on vinyl or stick them in a singles club or just come up with some idea to. So you can own them. People still like to own a physical product, especially of a certain age. Kids probably don't bother. It's all Spotify, but, you know, anyone 30s, 40s might still want to buy a bit of vinyl.
Yeah, well, and there's had a bit of a resurgence as well to it. You know, I think there is a lot more, you know, like the, was it the Snuts? This new indie band went to number one recently, and that's generally been driven by vinyl sales. That's the thing, because it doesn't get as much weighting, but obviously there is quite an extra weighting for physical sales. So, yeah, you can. Definitely.
Every town's now got a record store. You know, they've disappeared almost completely, except for the big cities before now. Say, like in a day off on tour in Bristol, there'll be 3 or 4 record shops we'll go wandering round. It's the sort of thing we used to do in the old days. Go to HMV to kill a couple of hours, buy some CDs. Keeps you at the pub. So that's great again. Yeah. We used to do on tour, you know, get up and wander around, look at the local scenery and buy an album.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was one of the points I was going to make, actually. You mentioned there about, you know, giving away these tracks now via the secret list. And I really love the tune that you did on this April one, which was Summer's Here.
All right,
and I
yeah.
think, you know, and it was really lovely as well because there's the post about it as well. And that, to me, that was just pure classic, you know, big, swelling, soulful embrace. And I think, this is brilliant. This is one of the, you know, if this was like a new song by a new band, I'd be like, who the hell are they? You know, this is the future. That's a great tune.
Yeah, there's some of them that you wonder why they never made it on an album. You think, what were we thinking back then? You know, just sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees kind of thing. Or you need a bit of hindsight. Are you trying to do something different with each album? And it doesn't fit in what you're trying, the direction you're going. So stuff gets left behind. But in hindsight, it might be in the better stuff, some of it. You know, a lot of bands have better B-sides than A-sides, though, don't they? It's a well-known fact because they're not trying to be tick all the boxes for a single, you know. What you need to do to get on Radio 1 and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I think that's a really interesting one that you guys had that had a similarity to what Oasis did. And Oasis always get kind of heralded for, you know, for doing these amazing B-sides, you know, because every CD single and up to that point, I think a lot of bands had just done sort of remixes or it'd be one B-side when it was a vinyl. Whereas then they were one of the first bands that were like, no, we're going to put 3 or sometimes 4 songs on a CD. And you guys went, as I say, you guys did that as well. And you were, so it's not just the All You Good, Good People, you know, single, it's an EP and there's 4 amazing songs, you know, and that was really important to you.
It was kind of like I don't know, you might not be around for very long. Let's try and give people as much as you can quickly and also give value for money. And
yeah.
We knew what we were doing, and we were gutted when it was banned from the charts, that sort of thing, you know. And then it just went back to one B-side, and there was no point in really spending months crafting this beautiful little piece of artwork in its own, you know, entity, whatever it was. So, yeah, I'm a bit sad about that because it'd have been nice to carry on, but I don't know, chart rules, whatever, I don't know why they banned that.
For
the reason.
Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it? Because they changed the rules and it was, yeah, so it went from 4 and then to 3. And it's like, you know, because it was such a shame because, you know, whether it was, as say, your EPs early on or the Oasis singles, it was, you'd go to your HMV, you'd spend your £4 and it's a mini album. It's great, you know?
And the remix, like you say, a lot of bands were just putting remixes on and I'm not a big fan of listening to different versions. I want a definitive version. I want the band to play that version every time I see them and you know,
yeah, no, exactly, or like, you know, or just like the instrumental version, you know, and things like that. I know they'd do that a lot, wouldn't they? Karaoke,
yeah, god,
yeah. But I mean, taking it back a bit, growing up, what sort of you know, what bands particularly stuck out to you and then also then inspired you to pick up a bass guitar?
I remember, I mean, like a lot of, because I'm 50s, I grew up watching Top of the Pops in the 70s, and I was always sort of drawn to The Sweet and David Bowie and these sort of slightly weirder things that your mum and dad would go, what the hell's are you wearing, and all this stuff. So I was all attracted to that side of things. And then I remember seeing The Stranglers doing Nice and Sleazy on Top of the Pops, and my mum and dad going, this is horrible, and I'm thinking, this is brilliant. And it was, you know, from then onwards, I was just addicted to punk for, you know, I got the second wave of punk, a bit young for the Sex Pistols, but certainly Stranglers and Stiff Little Fingers and all the, like, 79, 80, 81, all that era.
We came across the West Sea. We didn't have much idea of the kind of climate waiting. Used our hands for guidance, like the children of a preacher, like a dry tree seeking water, or a daughter. Nice and sleazy, nice and sleazy does it.
I went up massively into, and then kind of went a bit gothic, really, when she took me. And then I think my favourite time after that was probably the Manchester scene, when it all, Happy Mondays and Stone Roses and Oasis came along, and as well as that, the Pixies and Nirvana kicking off in America, and PJ Harvey, Radio. It was a brilliant time, really, early 90s. We were all massively into all that stuff. That's what got us together in the first place, you know. I think my favourite for Embrace was, must be into the Stone Roses, PJ Harvey and Oasis. That's what got me to ring up Danny in the first place.
Yeah. You know,
saw him in the local Yellow Pages and walked up to his house and we chatted and now we're in.
But you were a little bit older than the guys, weren't you? You'd had, yeah. You'd been to uni and were married and had a job and stuff.
Yeah. I was at the same school as them, but I'd have been in sixth form when they were in first form or second form, something like that. And yeah, and they lived literally half a mile from me. And my dad went drinking at the local bowling club with the McNamara dad, and they talked about stuff. And they never mentioned that they were looking for a bass player. So it was weird, really. Weird, yeah, coincidence. Literally half a mile away from me, same school, didn't know them. Yeah.
That's nuts. But you'd been playing. You were in bands and things that just hadn't really made it.
Punk bands and silly bands, and you know, bands like, you know, Do you know Half Man Half Biscuit? I mean, I've been like that sort of thing, not serious stuff, taking the piss out of writing silly songs. And uni, I was in about three bands, and then after that, I was in a band that was kind of punk, but it was me and two veg punk. I wasn't really a massive fan. I wanted to get out and do something more interesting. I'd kind of given up, to be honest. I got a proper job and I was earning decent money. I hated every second of it. But, you know, you suddenly buy a car, you get a mortgage, and you suddenly that life, so your life mapped out, isn't it? Once the band started getting a lot of interest, we got a manager and we started getting record company interest. It was a case of, right, I mean, I was saying, I had about $2,000 in the bank, which I thought would last me 2 or 3 months. And luckily, we got signed within that 2 or 3 months. So it just all worked out perfectly, like it was written in the stars. Yeah.
That must have been a bold choice, though, and a difficult conversation with the missus, maybe.
Yeah, it was, but she was working and she said, I'll support you for a year or two, whatever. And so she knew I hated my job, you know. It was just like a caged rat, really, just pacing. I wanted to get out of there. Office work wasn't for me.
And when you saw it, so you guys, because I know the brothers had been sort of making music since, I think, 1990, in various bits and pieces, and then you came in that later, and it was then you joining that, then it all happened pretty quick after that.
They'd kind of, before, I think they'd have got this review that compared them to like Echo and the Bunny Men and Chameleons, our lowest common denominator copyist of all that stuff, and they suddenly like looked at themselves and thought, yeah, we are, we're just copying our heroes, we need to find what's Embrace. So they went away, and like when I joined them, they just started that process. We were rehearsing 3, 4, 5 times a week, banging away, jamming, trying to find out what Embrace was. And I think Richard found this song called Retread on one of the tapes that we were making at the time, and said, that's your first song that you've written, you know, which is a proper song. And once Danny realised he could do it, then it opened up everything else. And that's what, you know, we went from there, really.
And it must have been a bold choice, because, you know, for a rock band, you know, like you expect sort of a rock band's first album to be, you know, if there's 12 tracks, you probably expect it to be 9-10 rockers and then two ballads or slower, you know, slower songs. But you guys didn't do that. You came out of the, you know, you'd obviously all you Google people have been a massive hit and One Big Family. So there were these big, bold tunes. But then also this album, I remember being really taken aback by it because I had One Big Family and All You Good People singles, and then getting the album and just being like, wow, like there's only, I know there's like Want the World and a couple, there's like a couple of other ones, but it's like 70, 80% quiet, beautiful ballads, really. That must have been an interesting choice.
Oh, thanks, breaking. It could have been because we'd done the EPs, maybe, is that we'd found out we could do quieter songs, subtle songs, you know, emotional songs. So it might have been the learning process of that, and where we realised these songs are the ones that put the hairs on the back of your neck up and touch you, and perhaps that's what we should be going rather than trying to be Oasis or whatever, because we're never going to be Oasis. They're the best at doing Oasis. Because there is one song on there, I Want the World, which we think sounds like Oasis. And we kind of embarrassedly say, yes, it is a very Oasis song. But... maybe I talk like the man who hangs on the lowest ground, and I don't want to be like the man who begs on the lowest ground. And when you run out of time, I'll fly high above your soul. We didn't used to inject a lot of songs, you know, because obviously they like the guitar loud. We'd have liked to sound like that, but we ended up sounding like them too much. So we had to find our own way, you know, that's probably why the strings came on the piano. You know, find out what we're good at. And we just happened to have an amazing musician in Mickey Dale who can do all the string arrangements and play beautiful piano.
Yeah, no, and it was beautiful. I mean, how did you guys feel at that time? Because obviously when you were... you know, you had this period building up, but that, you know, you was, I suppose it was happening, like the Britpop thing was kind of happening when, you know, before you had joined. And by the time you joined in 96, then it's massive. And so it's that, you know, there was that wave, I suppose, of a lot of bands sort of go, okay, well, where's the next Oasis? Where's, you know, and then you get like Travis, Stereophonics and yourself are really in that wave in like 97.
After there's the next Embrace All Time, Two Brothers, Northern, Gobshites, you know. We ticked all the boxes.
Yeah, the hair was a bit too long though. You should have had the bowl cuts. That's the problem.
Yeah, sure. Well, everyone's influenced by everyone else, aren't they? At the same time, we're all listening to the same music. We were all like the same thing, you know. They like the Beatles more than we did, probably. Although, you know, we do love the Beatles, but we were looking at the Beach Boys in America a little bit, I suppose, at that time. And then, you know, we had a lot of influences. We just like music.
Yeah, I know,
and you know, I think weird stuff, and I like The Fall and all sorts of stuff. You know, I mean, indie, you know, not bog standard. I like it weird.
Yeah, going back to what you're saying about that sort of switch over from like Chameleon's Echo to finding the Embrace sound. There was a brilliant blog post that Danny did a few years ago where he talked about how, you know, what a difficult place he was in, and actually, and that was part of that whole process was. A lot of those songs came out of that really difficult place he was in. And then, and so, and I know, because I always loved the first album, all your stuff, but that first album did really, really mean a lot. And then actually years later reading that, you just, you know, these aren't just songs to sing along to, but, and you put your own thing on it. But then when you think about where they've come from in that place as well, I mean, how did you guys, when you're sort of coming in presented with these songs, especially the more personal stuff, you know, how do you sort of, is that a difficult process to then sort of, okay, well, how do we mold this into then the actual finished product?
It's all difficult, I think, when we write songs. You know, the good stuff is hard. And I mean, Danny has a knack of drawing on his reserves of crap that he's been through, like all great singers do. And the more you sing about yourself, the more universal it tends to be generally, you know, because we're all human, we've all suffered and stuff. Well, I don't know how it works, really. I mean, Danny sings and he brings his lyrics in, and we don't sort of go through with him a fine tooth comb or whatever and say, we don't like this, don't like that. We might comment on some of it, but he does his thing, and we, you know, we just go, that's great, Dan, or, you know, I think you should repeat that bit, but, you know, just we'll leave him to do it because he knows best.
Yeah.
And Rick brings in brilliant lyrics as well, and they together, they might change things, but when the rest of us get involved, we tend to go a bit stupid and suggest silly words. We're not lyricists at all, you know. He's tried in the past and he pulls his hair out when he asks us. So.
Well, you've gone off and done your the separate sort of punk band, haven't you? With
Yeah, I've got a little thing with Mike.
Yeah, Mike.
And I've also got another one with his neighbour. Is a long time wanted to be a guitarist and singer in a band, so we've started sending him ideas, and we've got another album's worth of stuff we're going to release at some point, which is really chilled out, sort of a bit proggy, really. You've got to keep busy, haven't you?
You know, I suppose Embrace is such its own thing, isn't it? But you have had sort of different moments in Embrace. It's not, you know, it doesn't tend to, you know, it does.
The world, though, that's the thing. We only tend to do the UK. So, you know, we might have 2-week tour and then festivals, you know, and that's not going to keep us happy. We need to do more than that. We need to have other creative outlets. And these bits of side projects, Rick's got one, Mickey's got one. It just, you know, keeps us happy. Plus, it's nice. I might give 50 song ideas to Danny and might get one used. Whereas when it's Land Sharks, it's like, here, sing to that, that's my riff. You know, say to Mike, it's singer. And so, yeah, I get more control and creativity involved.
Yeah, fair enough. And what about when you came out, like you said, about being Northerners and being gobshites? I mean, there was one of the things I really like about bands is when they are just confident. And they will come out and say, yeah, we're the best band in the world, or we're great. You guys were happy to do that, you know, a lot of, you know, and I think they had...
I think, but yeah, I mean, we were confident, but a certain amount of it were bluster because you knew you had to say that sort of thing to the press. And if you're from up north, you probably have to say it more. That's probably where it started from, you know, because most of the press is in London. You've got to be confident and say you're going to be the next big thing. For them to come up from London to see is a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff was said. I said it with a smile on our faces as well, or a wink, but it doesn't come across in the press. It comes across as an arrogance and nodheads. But we were kind of joking around. You know, we've had, like, NME journalists come on tour with us and have a fantastic time drinking with them every night party, and then they've gone away and slagged us off in the press. Or things about them. So, you know, they've got a story to make, and they're not really bothered about the truth, a lot of them.
Yeah. And I think that there was definitely a regionalist... I mean, Oasis got that, but maybe not as much because they're from Manchester. And Manchester always had this cool kind of mystique about it. But being from Yorkshire and Huddersfield, was it? It's not exactly like a, you know, a hotbed of indie music. So I think there was definitely, it was like, oh yeah, well, they're from Huddersfield. You know, there was that stigma.
I think Shed 7 get that as well from being from York, and you know, it's not a cool place to be from a music point of view. Well, it is Manchester that sort of overachieves, really, isn't it? Manchester's probably, for me anyway, the most important music centre in the world. Yeah.
And even people that aren't actually from Manchester, like Joy Division, that gets, oh, they're Manchester. It's like, not really.
Well, I think Manchester, and I think the former Manchester, but they're not really. They're Salford and Bury. So, yeah, it kind of sweeps up all that Lancashire area, doesn't it? Except for Liverpool, obviously, which is still the Beatles.
yeah, exactly. But it's funny, you've had, like... you know, then a few years later, we see Kaiser Chiefs came out from Leeds and naming themselves after, what was it, Lucas Radebe's team. And, you know, they've done stuff like with Josh Warrington, like playing him out to the, you know, the boxer, you know, playing him out and things like that. So that's cool. Like, it feels like, you know, and obviously you've had all the Sheffield bands, but once again, it's sort of, it's a, It is a funny one.
We've had this all our lives, where you're from, and we get called Huddersfield. None of us are from Huddersfield, but we recorded our first album in Huddersfield in a community studio there. Three of us, me and the McNamara's, are from Halifax, Mike and Mickey from Bradford. So, what are we, Halifax, Bradford band? Neither's pretty cool, is it? What's Yorkshire? People think of, sheep and farms, don't they, still? Last of the summer wine, but... Yeah.
But, well, if that's what it is, and that's what then gets those soaring, I think you can feel it, like in the soaring kind of beauty of a lot of Embrace stuff. You do almost get that kind of pastoral feel to it, you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like city music to me. It feels like...
I think the stuff we did with Youth as well sounds, because it was all done in Spain, in like in the mountains with big blue skies. There's an element of big blue skies in there, that Youth brings to it. And, some of the jams we did with him were some of my favourite stuff we've ever done. And there's lyrically, they might not be people's favourite, but music and mood and, Rick's guitar and Mickey's playing and stuff. That's some of my favourite stuff.
Yeah. There was... I mean, on the Oasis side, they're coming through, Noel had been pretty rude about you guys a little bit. Was there ever, how did you feel about that? And was there, I'm not aware of there ever being kind of, you didn't support them as far as I'm aware. Did your paths cross much?
I think didn't that come from Noel reviewing the singles in the NME, and he said something horrible about Danny's singing, which really upset Danny when we were recording our first album, which didn't help, but that's what he does to everybody, and once you kind of get used to it, it's funny, and you really like his sense of humour, and I really like Liam, to be honest. He makes me laugh. We've only played with him once, and that were in, I think it was Valencia at a festival, and Noel had left at that time, and it was just Liam's band then, wasn't it? I can't remember. Did he fall out of a guitar incident or something?
Yeah, that was in 2000, and Matt Dayton was standing in on guitar.
And they were brilliant, Liam were really relaxed, I think, without his brother breathing down his neck, and he was really funny. And we even sat with him on the bus back to the hotel afterwards, and Rick was talking about cookery to him for some reason. He was talking about how to make the favourite meals or something. So, there were no animosity or anything, and they were just, friendly as anything.
That's interesting, though, isn't it, that you, such two massive bands, that you haven't crossed over more with more festivals and things?
Yeah, it's only when I thought about it, yeah. We've always been on the other day to us for some reason, and we've never caught up with them.
Yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? You would have thought that, I was looking at, I interviewed the guys from Jet, and, they first met them through, the V Festival, and they were doing the same days. Maybe it's, being... that maybe the sort of organisers would sort of deliberately space you guys out, knowing that if you want to appeal to...
Yeah, I don't really know.
Yeah, funny one, isn't it?
They're a bit the same, so put them on separate days and spread us out. But I'm sure we'll meet up one of these days, because they're definitely going to reform, aren't they?
You reckon?
Don't you? When I follow Liam every day, he's going, maybe...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that the key thing there is that he's been so rude about Noel's wife. I mean, he's gone quiet on it for the last few months, actually. So maybe he's been told.
They're stuck with each other, unfortunately, aren't they? That's the problem. And once enough time apart, I think the money will lure them back. There'll be like this massive Wembley Stadium event, or there's some huge event that makes some millions.
Yeah, but I don't think, I think that would be very difficult for Noel to then, go back into the, he's been so used to being in the centre now, to actually shift back across the stage.
for long. You might want to do it for a week or two. But,
yeah.
A studio together recording.
No, probably not.
Years now, aren't they? They're both leaders in their band, so.
Mm-hmm. How did you find that with the brothers in Embrace? Any issues there over the years?
Well, they argue, but not like the Oasis brothers. It's usually over songs. Danny will think a song's finished and will have worked on it all week or all tired of it and think that's that put to bed. And then Rick's the one who kind of is most objective. He'll kind of go, it's not right. It's not getting me anymore. It used to be getting me. Now it doesn't. And then they'll have a big argument. And then basically, if Rick says that, we know the song's wrong. We've got to redo it. I'll forget about it for now and put it on back burner and go back to it another day. And it's hard to do that because you can convince yourself everything you do is brilliant, you know.
Mm.
You sat there going, it's fantastic. It's only when you hear it through other people's ears that you hear faults with it. And
then, right. Then,
bit long, or it's a bit slow, or it, you know, that's not as good as we think. That's yeah. The act when you play it to your manager for the first time, or you know, someone else, like the record company, and you go, is it as good as, you know, you've got to be super confident.
Yeah, or you go and sit in the car and play it through the car speakers rather than through the brilliant studio speakers.
A little tinny speaker in the car, like everyone else will hear it. Because in studio, you're spoiled with this beautiful sound, and you might be listening to kick drum thinking, that's a really nice kick drum sound. No one else in the world gives a shit.
I mean, going back to the what you're saying about like putting the stuff out on Patreon on the secret list, I just think that's great because, you know, especially when, like you're saying, you're a completionist, you're a fan yourself, you know, I want to hear everything, you know, as a band, for the bands I like, I don't want to just hear kind of the, you know, the 12 crafted songs in that 2 year period. You know, I want to hear every demo. So this is what annoys me about the Oasis world, where I think they could take a leaf out of your book, is that we know there's so much stuff out there. There's so many unheard demos and, you know, even stuff's been leaked and you know, there was a CD of 5 get demos that Gem had done that turned up in a, like someone had found it and, you know, ended up being auctioned and the stuff was then put online.
That stuff.
And it's so frustrating to me. But I mean, when I interviewed Andy Bell as well, I said, well, Andy, where's the, like, because the later Oasis albums haven't really been mined for anything, you know, the first couple have with, you know, sort of big packages and things, and they have released a few bits and pieces, but the later stuff, there's really nothing sort of leaked out. And I said that to Andy and he was like, no, like, what, you know, to him it was like, no, that's the sketches, you know, you don't want to see the sketches, you want to see the finished picture. But actually for me, and like when you look at art, you do want to see the sketches because you want to understand what was, how the artist came to that point. So I think it's really great that you guys are putting that stuff out there.
It's just certain quality. I mean, there's probably stuff that we're not going to ever share with anybody, where it's all duff nut bummers all over it, and you know, just arse lyrics and or whatever, you know, bad play, you know, the stuff that we're not going to put out that's embarrassing, or just put out stuff that we think there's a decent quality control on it, you know. And I was listening to some of the stuff we've got coming up in the next few months, and there's a couple I got WhatsApp last night to Danny and said, I don't think we should release these songs on Patreon, we should save them for the next album because they're that good.
Yeah.
And you forget about stuff, and sometimes you hear it and think, why isn't that on that album?
Mm-hmm.
Then I just get sort of a lot, because you write so much sometimes, you know. We're all sat there with notebooks doing lists and voting on songs, and was like, who likes this song? And it's like, yes. And then, no, I don't like that one. And it just gets daft, you know. Mm. Sometimes committee is not the best way. You need someone with a strong vision just to go, this is it. Do wise. Yeah. You know, trust me.
Mm.
Start voting on stuff. It's crazy.
But you've now got this direct way of communicating with the fans directly as well. And you know, and this is the fans that really care, you know, because they're willing to chuck you a few quid every month, you know, so it's an incredible way of, yeah, as I say, for the fans to get stuff, but then also you have that direct input from them, so you know what direction to go in, I suppose.
We know a lot of them, you know, we know the names, we know they've been with us for 20 years, so we've said hello to them, they, you know, met them outside gigs, even had a drink with some of them and things like that. It's great. I mean, they have access to us on Facebook, but I've stopped really going on Facebook because there's too much shit on there, and Twitter. I hate all the arguments on Twitter and all the idiots on there, so I keep well away from Twitter. So there's just Instagram, and we haven't really we haven't really used that one very much over the years. For some reason, it's all passed us by, and that's one of the big places we're trying to sort out now. Trying to get, we haven't gotten a verified account, so we're just trying to get a verified account and post stuff on that. It's crazy because we're
ridiculous.
We're all 50-year-old men, so we haven't grown up with this stuff, so we've kind of ignored it. Thinking we can't be bothered with that. It's for kids, isn't it? But, you know, proper bands have someone who does all this for them. Was on the payroll. We've done. It's me sat at home posting on Instagram. What shall I post today? And you know, my partner helps me out by taking photographs, and we're just like going back in history and find on this day you played Manchester. Put a picture up from that. I'm just trying to make that more interactive. But we're also trying to save stuff for Patreon. And when we start recording again, one of the ideas is like every week we'll do an update where we are on the album and give a little 30-second clip or something. This week we're working on this and give an insight into the process, because it always takes a lot longer than we think it's going to take. And there's a lot of stuff that we think is going to be brilliant along the way that doesn't work out. You know, you have a seed and you think, this is going to be brilliant, absolutely one of the best things we've ever done. And after working on it for a couple of weeks, you realise, who didn't that seed? Whereas other stuff, you think, you know, it's going to be all right. It turns out to be the best song on the album. So it'd be interesting to see behind the scenes on that sort of thing, I think, if you're a punter.
Yeah, definitely. But it's just, that's what we want. You know, you want to be in there, and you know, it's the closest thing, I think, to actually, you know, being invited in, jumping on the tour bus with you, isn't it? If you can be there.
Every gig we'll do a little backstage. So, you know, the reality is sat in a porter cabin at a festival being bored, trying not to get drunk before you go on stage. They're all having a laugh and taking the piss out of each other. You know, we're all men. That's, you know, we have I want to show a bit of that, you know, because in the past we used to get sort of as a bit serious, you know. But that's not my impression of the band. When we're together, I laugh more in a day with them than I do in a week at home, you know, just constant laughing.
Yeah, sure.
Chemistry, you know, that's why we've been together for 25 years, 26 years, near whatever it is. Yeah, a lifetime, in it.
you get worse than that for murder. So is that the plan then, just to sort of keep ticking over? You did this live sort of greatest hits the other day. Tell us about that.
So I'm excited about that because, you know, like I say, I go to a lot of record shops and I don't really see our stuff in the record shops because we've only ever released about 500 copies of albums because they weren't selling many vinyls in those days. So it's only, it's a new thing really. So hopefully that'll be in the record shops and we'll see what else we can get out there. Maybe some of these songs on vinyl would be good if we're allowed to license them off the record labels. I don't know who owns them, you see. That's one of the things. When you record, I think the record company owns everything you do in that period, but the record companies that we've been signed to have all gone anyway. What's gone? Independiente is gone. We've seen them all off.
I'm noticing a pattern.
I mean, Hut were the most successful label in the country at the time. They had Placebo and Verve and Smashing Pumpkins on the same little label as part of Virgin, who had Spice Skills, so a lot of money around.
Yeah.
We ended up doing massive £100,000 videos and things like that, wasting loads of money.
Well, that's the
£1,000 a day studios for months on end.
Yeah, yeah.
Ridiculous. Nowadays, you'd be in and out in a few years.
Yeah, it's a different world, definitely. But I mean, when you look back on that, I suppose when we look back at sort of the mid and late 90s, when you had that rise and there was all these other bands around there, I suppose the fact that you were a little bit older, being sort of about 4 or 5 years older than the other guys and having had a bit of a life, really, you weren't like 22, you know, just blown away by it like a lot of the Britpop bands. So did you have a sort of a slightly different view of it than the other guys?
I was quite cautious because, you know, we didn't want to come out of it bankrupt or like the Happy Mondays with a massive bill and stuff. So we're always very right from day one. It was kind of like, Steve, you do the accounts, and then just like I was saving receipts and stuff like that. Really boring, but really practical and sensible. And yes, yeah, so we never got shafted by taxman, and we never had to go on reality TV like poor Shane McGowan. Not Shane McGowan, who is it?
Sean.
Sean, yeah. Ryder had to be able to pay his debts off.
Mm. But yeah, I mean, so many of them got, like, in Spirals got screwed by accountants, didn't they? And, you know, brutal.
Well, we went straight to U2's accountant because they were like, oh, I think it was our J. Kilkenny, I think they were called. And that first tax meeting we had with them, my tax bill was more than I'd earned that year. So it was kind of like something not quite right here. So we tacked them off and then they sued us and we had to go to the High Court and all sorts of shit. I'd forgotten all about that, to be honest.
We just want to make music.
That's the last thing you want.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Good. All right, well, look, it's been really fun catching up, Steve. It's been brilliant. And thank you for the music over the years. Embrace has always been there. I think the first sort of interactions we had a little bit was because I've just, you know, for me, especially, well, all of your stuff, but it tends to be the quieter things, the likes of Retread and, you know, Higher Sights and things like that, that I just always go back to. And there's just something so beautiful in those songs. And it's Danny's voice, you know, yeah, Noel can slag it off if he wants to, but it's just the way he sings. It's so, you know, it really touches people, I think.
You know, you can watch X Factor for perfect vocals, but, you know, they've got soul. Danny's got soul in his voice.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for that. You know, it's been, yeah, I know it's meant a lot to me. And I know, obviously, and now you've had the ability to see how much it's meant to all these other people because you're getting to interact with them all the time via the secret list. So,
we're starting work on the new album as well in the next week too. Danny and Richard and Mickey are getting together to go through stuff on piano, song ideas before they get me and Mike involved. So fingers crossed, have an album out early next year.
Exciting. And then getting out on the road again.
Yeah, I think we've got a few, about four or five festivals booked for this year. I don't know if they'll be going ahead because they're August, September. We still don't know, do we? But then, yes, things are starting to come together for next year. Definitely getting a tour together and see what the reaction's going to be like.
No, it should be brilliant. No, really good. One things we tend to end with here with the Oasis podcast is the, obviously, I'll be dropping in clips as we go. And so have you got a particular Oasis song that you think is their best or that means a lot to you, it has a particular memory attached?
Well, I also think Live Forever, because it was the chart show that you spent a Saturday morning that was on every Saturday morning constantly, and that was just, I just thought that's one of the best songs of the 90s, and it's probably there. You know, that Wonderwall is another one that is classic, but Live Forever is their soulful thing. Do they finish on that one?
Well, they finished on loads of different ones over the years. Champagne Supernova and I Am the Walrus ended up being big finishers. Liam, I tell you, when Liam came back, he would do it on his first few comeback shows, especially after the Manchester bombing as well. And he had a situation where they just did it like, I don't know, maybe his band couldn't get it right or whatever reason, but he just did it like a cappella on the stage, you know, and that was just quite a beautiful thing, actually. But yeah. It is a very special song. It just got voted the best British song ever on the Radio X poll again. So, you know, it's a funny one. It does mean a lot to people, that one. But, yeah. And is there a particular Embrace song that means a lot to you?
Probably Good People, because that was a time we were driving back from London. We did that thing where you stick it with tape in the car. First time we listened to it, and I remember driving back all a bit depressed, thinking it'd been hard work and I didn't come out right. We put it in the car and suddenly it sounded fantastic. We thought, we finally got the right mix for this song. It sounds amazing. It doesn't sound like anybody else. We've got something special here. And suddenly, like Danny says, the sun came out and we were like happy driving back from London to Yorkshire. It was just, you know, just one of those moments where we'd actually got something.
Me, you're just about done with the wheel.
and that's beautiful. Yeah, well, that was it for me. Like, just the jukeboxes in 1998 for me. And, you know, when I was doing my A-levels and you had the World Cup 98 and on the jukebox, it was just Embrace and The Verve and Oasis. So just like hammered. And everyone that bought guitars, you know, it was for Embrace, The Verve and Oasis. They were the big three in like 97, 98. So when people talk about Britpop, they often talk about 93, 94, 95. But actually for those of us, you know, who were teenagers a little bit later, you know, Embrace, such an important band, such a big band. So, yeah.
Yeah. We were kind of swayed, and Radiohead even got classed as it at the start, didn't they?
Well, I've got my, I've got like a printed out Melody Maker front cover from July 1995, and it's like From the Beatles to Blur, Britpop, and it's got these classic Britpop LPs: Elastica, Oasis, Supergrass, The Booze, Radiohead, The Verve. So yeah, in 1995 they were officially counted as Britpop, you know.
Sure. I don't have those albums.
They don't necessarily sound like Menswear, but you know, they were British and they made amazing music, so you know.
Our first tour with Long Pigs and Travis, were they classed as Britpop?
Definitely, yeah. Well, look, Travis had that funny one because they had their first album, which was quite rocky, but the Good Feeling, and then they came back with the Man Who, that was much, yeah,
and things like that, and As It Always Rain, yeah,
yeah, and so much more relaxed and chilled out. But I think it was because he had a baby at the time, or he had neighbours, and he was writing everything sort of gently on acoustic, yeah. And then they ended up getting massive. Obviously, it's crazy. Yeah.
They did. They were nearly dropped, weren't they? And then Why Does It Always Rain came out, and suddenly they were number one.
Yeah. So. Cool. All right. Well, look, brilliant, Steve. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Really great to speak to you. And yeah, good luck with the tour. And I'll stay in touch, keeping an eye on the secret list.
We'll post it on the Instagram as well.
Oh, yes.
Spread it around, yeah.
Wonderful. So where can people find you and the secret list? Where would you point them out to?
I'd go to Facebook, really, because we've got one of the Linktree things that's got a link to everything on there. I'll take you to Patreon and Instagram and Twitter and all the stuff we do.
Wonderful. All right. Steve, thank you so much for your time, mate.
And cheers. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much to Steve from Embrace. I hope you enjoyed that, guys, and do make sure if you're an Embrace fan, you've got to check out the secret list. I say there's a couple of different tiers there on Patreon for them, and yeah, you get demos and you get interviews and you get all kinds of stuff. So if you're an Embrace fan, definitely go and check that out, because it's there's some really, really good stuff. And imagine if Oasis did that. Oh, how many million people would sign up to that and just be that they, it's just licensed to print money. It's ridiculous they're not doing it. Anyway, there you go. And obviously I'm on Patreon, so you can go and support me over on Patreon. You get early access to stuff and all that sort of stuff. So, but anyway, that'll do it for today. Thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast, and obviously thanks to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is. As I've just said, you can head over there, and from as little as $1 per month, Embrace is $5. I'd happily you know, give you everything for $1 a month, no problem at all, or £1 a month. Then yeah, you can get some really good stuff over there, so please go and check it out. You can always email me, oasispod@gmail.com. You can hit me up on the various social media platforms, at Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and Oasis Pod on Instagram. And if you can, do please review on iTunes or wherever else you can. And we'll be back again very soon, because we've got loads of good stuff recorded. And it's, as I said earlier on, it's very good to be back. Thanks again for listening. Stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.